On this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast, Joe and Ron chat with Talania Norfar and Chris Fancher, authors of the Project-Based Learning in the Math Classroom series. They chat with us all about PBL and how it can work for you. Lots of fun and learning on this episode. Buckle up and get ready to learn with Joe and Ron. Now, let's get into the show.
Have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher nerds. Start the show.
Back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I am a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade.
And I teach fifth grade math, science, and social studies.
And Joe, today our guests.
We have Talania Norfar, and Chris Fancher joining us, authors of Project-Based Learning in the Math Classroom. Specifically, my version I read was within the third through five realm.
Welcome. So good to have you guys here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today.
I love PBL, so I'm excited to hear about this and, you know, find out all this information in the math classroom.
And Ron, I think one of the things you'll really dig is everything in their book. It's all based through a like an empathetic lens. All the projects they talk about are like geared towards empathy. So it really made me think a lot of like through design thinking, which is something I had to go back and start to revamp on some of the ones that I had already had. But like that was one of the great things about this book. Like I was saying earlier, you can jump right into it and then start to implement things that you already have. So I'm going to be really excited about this podcast for sure.
And yeah, empathy is something that I think is huge for schools today. You know, to bring that in as much as possible. And, you know, Joe and I are big into the sustainable development goals and bringing those into the classroom. So, you know, where we can bring project-based learning, empathy, math all together in one spot is fantastic. Well, before we jump in, we always do our icebreaker, this or that. And today, Joe had the idea for this icebreaker. So, Joe, I'm going to let you tell us, go first.
All right.
Sweet. And Chris and Talania, you can go next and then I'll follow up.
So since our episode is coming out in the beginning of October, we figured we'd kind of make it Halloween themed. And we're going to go with it's candy based because Ron and I love all things food. And I was thinking, you know, there's two main, I think, candies out there that drive Halloween, especially in the mini sizes, at least in my household. And that's Milky Ways or Snickers.
Oh, that we're playing this, oh, that playing this, or that on the Teacher Nerds Podcast Show. Oh, that is it this, oh, that is it this, or that on the Teacher Nerds Podcast
Show. So given the choice, would you consider a Milky Way or a Snicker? Now, for me, it's really no question. I would say Milky Way all the way. Hey, you know what? Peanuts aren't my thing. If I wanted peanuts, I'd have probably a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or something like a payday. So personally, I like, the caramel, the chocolate, give me a Milky Way all day. Talania, how about you? Do you want to jump in there and tell us what your thoughts are?
I gotta help you out. I don't think you understand the power of freezing these things. So that just changes what you pick. You don't get a Milky Way and put it in the freezer and then eat it. It's not good. But a Snicker, a frozen Snicker, oh my God, that just hit so well. And then if we're adding Halloween to it, and you're, you know, I don't have any children, but I sometimes steal people's children so I can get the treat. You get those bite-sized Snickers and you just freeze a bunch of them and just you pop it like popcorn. Like it's just, oh, wonderful. But I still love all of you who still pick Milky Way. I still love you.
It's funny you mentioned the freezer because I could go into my freezer. My girlfriend loves like the Reese's peanut butter cups. And the Snickers as well, frozen in the freezer. You know, so I feel you. I can feel you. Chris, how about you?
You should probably marry her.
Man, Ron, we got to edit that out.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny. Is this goes back to like Boy Scout camp in the '60s for me, cause I'm so old, but they had frozen candy bars that you could buy at the, whatever they called it, the camp, the Boy Scout camp store. Hmm. And so that's where I started on the frozen Snickers. It's funny you said that.
Jesus.
Even without frozen Snickers, I would go Snickers over. I would. I'm sorry. I like both, but if I had a choice, I'd go Snickers every day.
Is it the peanuts?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Ron's reaction, so I think it's going to be 3-1 here.
No, you and I are normally opposite sides of these. So, yeah, I'm Snickers all the way. Like, you eat a Milky Way, you just feel like somebody stole something out of your candy bar. Like,
what are you kidding me?
Something missing. Like
all that caramel, and I'm sure there's nougat there. And
there's caramel and nougat and chocolate in the Snickers, and you get the bonus.
Yeah. Peanuts. I guess peanuts are my thing.
Now I feel you. I'm not a like nuts inside of person most of the time. Like I don't do my ice cream with nuts. I don't know. Like usually, but the Snickers they just did it right.
Yeah. It's like a a Milky Way is like a Three Musketeers.
Yeah, no. Like, Musketeers.
Yeah. That is why Three Musketeers did not make it into this or that, because it is not like Three Musketeers. Three Musketeers isn't even in this realm. I knew I was going to get crapped on for this.
It is just fluffy chocolate and then chocolate on the outside. Yeah, Musketeers is much more on but the baseline.
That's the nougat, right? It's chocolate and nougat.
Yeah.
Nobody brought up Almond Joy, so we'll stay away from that.
Yeah, because that's a whole nother, yeah.
Almonds are
do
like
they
vegetables.
Still make them?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they're,
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have picked that either.
Are they the red ones or the blue ones?
Blue ones are Almond Joy.
Okay.
And mounds are without the...
Yeah.
But they're both still coconut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind coconut and chocolate. I would eat those.
Yeah. With that. Well, thanks for playing along.
Okay. I was like, is that the only one? We could maybe agree on some other this or that.
We could gang up on Joe for another this or that.
That's right.
Yeah, like, you know, the candy corn versus, like, it's supposed to be Laffy Taffy, but it's not like that.
Oh, wait. I'll take a Laffy Taffy all day long. I love
It's not Laffy Taffy. It's supposed to be. But it's the, and see, I feel like we're all old enough to remember this candy. It's wrapped in wax paper. And again, it makes you feel like you're about to eat a good piece of candy, but it is horrible.
Yeah.
Because it is soft and like, you know, chewy like a Laffy Taffy.
Is it not. Little honey?
No, it don't.
They're
have
good.
Name. I don't remember them having a name. It was
Mary
like the
Jane?
Cheapest candy you could buy. And it's what. All of the bad houses.
Yeah,
but you didn't know it was the bad house.
Type it in. Listen in. You know, put in the comments when you watch it. Yeah,
because I am dying to know what the name is. I never look for it in a store. It's horrible candy. It has no label. But you definitely just put it aside and throw it away when you take it home. But a candy corn. Oh my god.
Yeah, I like candy corn.
Yeah,
I would eat candy corn.
Yeah, I love candy corn. Yeah,
we're all together again.
All right, now we can.
Now we can go into the matter.
Yeah.
Good.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. Are you ready for a podcast that celebrates innovation in education? Well, look no further than the What School Could Be podcast. On the What School Could Be podcast, you'll discover stories of educators and education leaders who ignite student engagement, purpose, and joy. Experience the power of project-based, place-based, and product-based approaches that spark student engagement and purpose. Unlock the potential of personalized, inquiry-based instruction that embraces diversity and taps into every student's unique abilities. The What School Could Be podcast, inspiring imagination, igniting change, and empowering the next generation. And now back to the show.
All right. So, Ron, you want me kicking this thing off here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, let's.
All right. So I guess if this is going to be all about project-based learning and bringing it into the math classroom, I guess let's start off in like the simplest way, or I don't know if we could do it in a simple way. What is, in general terms, project-based learning?
Since I went first on this and that, I would let Chris kick us off with the meaning.
All right. And the important thing that you, the listeners need to pick up on, too, so that they don't sound ignorant, is that we never say APBL. It's APBL unit or APBL project or PBL something, but we don't do APBL. So if that's the first thing to pick up, because project-based learning is a system. It's a way of teaching where you are presenting the students with a problem or something that will intrigue them, that they feel that they can go out together in groups and learn about whatever the situation is. And if it's a problem, solve it. Or maybe it's just learning about something. But in the process, you sneak in standards, whether it's math or whatever content you're throwing in. You sneak in those standards and they say, well, we don't know how to do that. And you say, great, then maybe I can help you. And you go out and you help them learn what they need to. That's my own version of the story. How's that, Talena?
I love that. I forgot about the APBL problem. Yes, please, people, don't do that. You will get very, very trampled on out there in these streets. But I would just add one element that I know I found so beautiful, and what I found out later that sometimes teachers wish they could do more. It also gives you the natural ability to help the soft skills that we often want to teach, but we feel like we can't because we have so much curriculum to cover. But because of the way the system is designed, you have to teach them how to collaborate. You have to teach them how to communicate. You have to teach them how to critically think. You have to do all those things that we think is a sidebar in project-based learning so that they are successful through this process. Because now, spoiler alert, you don't just like go sit at the desk after you tell them go do it.
Right.
Like this is not you. You are there. You are guiding, you are facilitating, you are helping them process and have those frustrating moments, but also those joyful moments all along the way. But the soft skills is just so beautiful to see unfold. I tell people a lot that you're really helping kids become the people you always want them to be.
And another thing I'm going to add real quick with that is, before I started with project-based learning, I always did the 10,000 steps. You know, I got to get, and teachers get 10,000 steps. I mean, it's hard not to get 10,000 steps as a teacher. You become a PBL teacher, it's suddenly 20,000 steps. You're not sitting down ever. You're constantly walking from this group to that group to the next group. You know, how's it going? What do you need help with? You know, are you thinking down this way? It's always asking questions and walking around the room, and you get some exercise.
Well, it's definitely a fun way, I feel like, to bring the learning from the textbook like into the real world, you know, and it's always like, why are we doing this? I feel like that's an easy way to show the why, because, this is math in the real world.
And so how did you all come into project-based learning? Like, you know, what's your background that project-based learning kind of struck a chord for you?
Okay, you couldn't hear us laugh. Yeah. We were tracking, but we both have very interesting stories. So I'll start with mine because mine was jacked up. So and Chris was a lot like Chris came into it a better way. But we laugh about both of our interests. So so similar, we both came from another profession. I was not always a teacher. I did way too many things that this podcast could hold. But I did a lot of things, and I got asked to come into teaching by a former high school classmate. And so I said, I'll give it a try, thinking that I'm just going to be here for a second. Didn't think it was going to be a real career changer. And I ended up getting at this school that said they were project-based learning, but they offered no training. Like they brought me and the other people that they had hired that was very similar. We were all alternatively certified, and they put, and I really feel dated, even though it was only 2005, but they rolled the TV in and put the video in the VCR. Now, for those of you who are listening to this and you're like, what did she just say? Yes, a VCR. Google it if you have not seen one in your lifetime. And they played the video. And I was like, oh, this is, cool. This is what education is doing now? Cool. And I thought we were going to get more training, but that was literally the end of the session. And like they sent us to our room to get ready. So I did a lot of like searching and learning by the school of hard knocks. But Chris's experience was way, way more better than that. I'll let him tell it.
Yeah, I came from the Navy and went through a military transition program at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. And in there, my mentor teacher was telling me middle school classes are all done collaboratively now. It's all group work. It's all done collaboratively. And I focused 2 years working on my master's and on collaborative group work. And then I went to my first school and no one in the school but me was doing anything in groups. Well, that's weird. And because my wife was also Navy, we were traveling every 2 to 3 years. So at one point I ended up in Texas and I met this dude, ninth grade algebra. And they said they had a smart board. And I'm like, well, damn, I want a smart board for my group work. And they said, well, you can just check it out and you can have it for 2 or 3 weeks, but no one will ask for it. So you can just have it. I'm like, all right. So I took it. It was wheeled in. So it was a portable one. I wheel it into my classroom and I'm doing group work and teachers would come by like, wow, what are you doing in there? And I'm like, well, we're doing math, you know, and collaborative group work. Isn't that what everybody's doing? And I got a phone call from a principal of a new tech school. And he said, I hear you're doing great stuff. You for me. I'm like, who are you and why are you calling me? And I literally went to see the school and where there's project-based learning everywhere and realized this is what I've been looking for. And I became a new tech teacher and the rest is history. So, yeah.
Very cool. And is PBL, like I hear project-based learning and problem-based learning. Are they really both the same thing or is there a difference?
Well, yeah, we have this question all the time. Basically, the way I structure it or try to help people see is kind of think of it as in umbrellas. So like project-based learning can like have the entry point of a problem like the way problem-based learning does. It just doesn't have to. It's not as limiting as that. Whereas problem-based learning, it definitely has to be like this document that states the problem. It's from the medical sort of science lens background where it's grounded and that's how the kids enter. But we have so many acronyms in education. Just PBL, whichever way you want to express the P,
yeah.
Like let's go ahead. Let's go as long as the kids are star spark with their inquiry, they're driven, they're learning by their inquiry, they create their learning in some sort of visual dynamic problem-based learning. Sometimes they're not really creating as much as they're just going to present. And then they need to say it to the audience. We good. Like they go learn all those other acronyms that keep changing.
And it's important. I think that, you know, you brought up inquiry. It's inquiry, and inquiry-based learning is another kind of thing under the umbrella. And then you hear the educators, I'll use that loosely, in Florida talking about, well, these people want to do inquiry where, you know, a teacher just walks up and says, you have to learn it yourself. Well, no. No. But inquiry at the highest level, if you're talking about college level inquiry class, yeah, I mean, it might be where the students are really kind of learning for themselves and just being guided by the professor. But, you know, in middle school, elementary school, I mean, inquiry, because we want them to be inquiring about what's going on. We want them to be inquisitive. That's what we want. You know, why they should be sitting there thinking about how am I going to solve this, whatever the issue or problem or whatever they're working on? How am I going to do that? So get them, throw that hook out, catch them and start reeling them in so that they're on a path to learning.
And I originally was using PBL as strictly for higher level students. If kids were able to pass the test before teaching any lessons, then bang, here I have to design this unit per se to get them through 2 weeks worth of me teaching to be, you know, inquisitive on themselves and work with these topics and be challenged and really think about things and, you know, get some movement involved and really drive their learning. But the more I read the book, I'm thinking this isn't just for kids with higher level learners. Like this is a way for all these kids to be like, yo, maybe I'm not good in, you know, math class getting A's and everything, but I'm math based in that I could still do all these math activities in a real world setting to get that, like, I guess that better feel. I can't tell you how many times last year I heard, oh God, I hate math and I hate math class. And I would start to rip the kids like, yo, I work my butt off to have a fun, enjoyable class. And he's like, I don't. And one kid in particular, I don't hate the class, Mr. DiPaolo. I hate math. And I know I was that kid last year going into this curriculum. Like, I don't know this stuff. I hate math. I haven't done this in so long. But to actually see, you know what? You do use math every day in some way, shape or form. So to say like, I'm not good at math and then do math related things, it's like I'm seeing now every time a lot on social media, they're saying never talk bad about yourself. That's self-doubt. Like when, even if in a joking manner, because you start to, you'll live that, you know, your mind will start to take that in and think, you know, like I stink at math. So, oh yeah, I guess I really do stink at math. So to be able to conceptualize yourself as a math problem solver, I feel like every kid could benefit from this and not just those higher level learners.
And I think one of the things Talena has done, and she doesn't always do it, but is
I was like, what'd I do?
I know what you do. No, where you're getting the students as creating like a company where they're the mathematicians for the company solving issues. And so they're wearing that hat, you know, and even at the, and she's talking about juniors and seniors in high school. I mean, you can wear a hat at that level, you know, and obviously in elementary school, it's even more fun, if you will, to wear a hat of the person solving the problem. I interrupted a little bit. Sorry.
No.
Not,
hey, it's a conversation. All that's about. What we do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I like the book, because the book was a mix, right, between stories and information. And the stories were kind of, I guess, the why. You know, like this is why we do it, because this is what happens. And these are the results. And the stories were basically, you know, the projects or the process with going through those project-based learning units. Now it's just really easy to read and like definitely is going to change the way we're moving forward this year in the class. One of the things I loved was, and this will be like the first, you know, our first question in relation to the book, math and literacy being two sides of the same coin. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it's always, you know, there's language arts and there's math, but there's definitely similarities in both. So does someone want to jump in and kind of talk about that topic?
Yeah, that was kind of my baby in the book. and I'm so grinning and I know Chris is too, because stepping back a little bit before I talk about it, when we started this journey, we both were trying to write the book separately. Then we met each other because people kept asking, like, is there a book? And we're like, no. And so we met and we were like, yes, we just found this vibe. So let's join up. And then it took us forever to write the first book. it's hard to teach and write. And so we finally published Project Based Learning in the Math Classroom, grades 6 through 10. And then, of course, people were like, is there an elementary version? And so we were like, okay, I guess it's time for us to go ahead and do that part too. And so I wouldn't recommend this, but we wrote both the K-2 and the 3-5 at the same time. But I wouldn't recommend doing that. But we did it because we wanted the books to still have a flow from K through the 10th grade. But we also wanted this unique aspect of the elementary to have this tie, and it would be easier for us to do. And so one of them was me saying, we going to have a chapter on math and English. Like, we cannot get away from not having that. Because one, I recognized that elementary teachers came from much more of a literacy land. Mm-hmm. The training and everything is from that. And they have a unique sort of like skill set through that lens. They just didn't know that math has some of the same lens And I was a journalist, like literally that was my degree and my background. And so I always seen English and math together. I always seen it as a literacy. I never seen it as two odd pieces that, and one could be you good at and one you're not good at. I just seen it as the way you make sense of the world. Like if you're not literate, meaning both English and math literate, like you can get really jacked up. So I wanted to sort of bring, how does it look in a reading manner? How does it look in a listening manner, a speaking manner, a writing manner? Like how do they, techniques that you do in English still transfer from a math aspect and help those teachers who felt like they're not math people engage in the work and for them to also see how you need to dance with both of them that way. So that's what happened, but I'm glad you love it too.
And you know what, you know, teaching, you can't be an individual in teaching. You got to have friends somehow that'll help you. And Tlay and I were blessed with people who are really, really, really knowledgeable in the PBL world. And they teach, you know, K through 12, they teach every subject, specials, you know, everything. And they're at our disposal. And we picked, you know, we did reach out to them and we did get some, you know, guidance on, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, third grade reading and fourth grade reading and things like that. So that really helped.
So that's almost like a very good transition. So like if I wanted to jump into PBL tomorrow and I didn't necessarily have a great background knowledge into it, like what are some things I would want to keep in mind when starting off my unit? So something's already created, now just bringing it into the classroom.
You know, one of the things that we always say is there are projects everywhere on the internet, everywhere. And if you just research, you know, third grade project around this, you're going to come up with them. Most of them will not be project-based learning projects. They're end of unit projects and things like that. But once you have an image in your head of, ooh, I see what they did with that, you don't have to start it at the end of where you normally, you could start it at the beginning where you need to still learn those concepts that were in that project that they were highlighting. So that's one of the things that I bring up all the time is they're out there. But students, this is the important thing. Students will see through you if you're using someone else's project.
Right.
It needs to be your project, your words, your kind of the way you teach is in there, everything that the students would expect. Because if you suddenly say, all right, go to page one and we're going to do this, 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 and they're like, that's not you. They can see where they're smart. They can tell that that's not your project.
At the beginning of last year, I did, and I always say this with a hanging head, I went to Teachers Pay Teachers because I needed something. I needed something for the very next day, and I brought it in. And the kids did it, and they were excited because, you know, it was something a little different than what we were doing. But then the more comfortable I got with it, the more, I would say, ChatGTP came into the mix. To generate ideas and just to keep things flowing a little bit easier, you know, like just as a little assistant, we did start to design our own projects based off what the kids were into. And I mean, it did help that we did this over spring break. So there was a little more time and there was this huge project that we designed based all through Minecraft. And when we asked the kids that were in majority of the time, all the projects and experienced, you know, multiple projects, I always said, which ones did you like better? You know, they said the Minecraft one, because it's more than just doing a worksheet or doing something rote that isn't really real, you know, just maybe like a different worksheet or a little bit more difficult of a problem. But to bring in something that you're creating, that you're interested in, that you have control over, you know, that's where they really seem to flourish, excuse me. And that's where all those different key components start to really come in. So, I just feel like that's why it's so valuable to get it to every kid, you know, not just the kids that are getting A's on.
Yay. Yes.
And, you know, I will add to, because you brought up a great point about like you didn't know how you were going to teach when you started teaching. And I think we got to like wrestle with the fact that like, that's the most teachers now. Like we're still got a huge teacher shortage. We still have a whole lot of people who are not going into teaching with any formal training. Like I mentioned to you, I got thrown in. Chris had the ability to at least go to school for a little bit. and then start to do it. And so, like, how do you help that person? So it's a couple of things. Plug. I'm now working for an organization called PBL Now. It's a part of PBL Work, and we're creating full units where teachers will be able to, like, just adapt rather than start off from scratch. But then if you are, like, all you know is you definitely want to teach ratio, for example, or all you know, you want to help kids with decimal. Okay, just think about adding an element. So, like, there's seven elements. There's the challenging problem or driving question piece. So you could just throw out the question to the kids and make them wrestle. Or you can do sustained inquiry. It took me a long time to work on that one. But you can start looking at how can you have kids do a questioning process. Me and Chris are really big fans of the question formulation technique. It's from the Right Question Institute. You can Google it. They have great trainings on it. So you could start. You can do that. Or you can look at this, let me have kids reflect more when I have them do the unit. Or maybe I want to have kids critique each other. Critique and revision is another element. So maybe I want to bring that in. Or maybe I want them to, like, present something to another person. It may not be that great, but maybe they're just going next door and they're trying to explain to someone what they created. And then let them have some voice and choice. Like, that's the element that I think people think is just, like, far range. Like, you just let third graders go. Like, no. No. But it's about having them have the ability to have an input in what matters. If you're doing, like, choice menu in your as a part of your class, that's kids having voice and choice in how they're working. If you let them choose roles or centers, that's another way you can have kids have voice and choice. So it doesn't mean that it's unmanaged. It just means that you're allowing them to grow in their advocacy of the learning, that they have a decision-making process that they develop and they start to grow in how they learn and develop. So it's the seven elements, I know I said them really fast, but you can go to PBL Works. It's the gold standard for PBL. And we mention it in the book, but you know, it was a copyrighted thing. So we just talked about it in other models. And we didn't just say those are the elements. But they really are a great way to engage as well. I call it Project Light. You're not doing full project-based learning, but you are incorporating a lot of the design that helps kids experience some of the key features of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, and just building on that real quick, when I'm working with teachers in my school that I want to help because they want to do project-based learning, I'll say, well, you know, what you really are good at doing reflection. So make reflection the thing you're going to focus on for this project. And again, we make it PBL Light. You don't have to do every element of gold standard project-based learning when you're just starting out. You know, you want to have a problem, you want to have them do something, maybe a presentation at the end, and you want to have them work collaboratively. You know, and you're going to add that we're going to have every day, we're going to have a reflection and I'm going to work on that so that they get used to reflecting. Yeah, that's really what we're saying.
That's one of the things I asterisked in the book was the reflection piece, because a lot of times, especially since it was my higher level learners, I wasn't meeting with them as much as I was with some of the kids that needed me a little more. So moving forward, I want, even if I can't get to them, some type of reflection piece. So even if they're not talking to me, so they'll have the opportunity to at least talk and reflect on, you know, this is what happened today. This was the learning I went through. These were my problems. You know, just really, really looking forward. I know I keep saying this, but just, you know, looking forward to run with it next year. And I like the way you said the PBL Light. So there is a lot going on to a unit. But I will say this from personal experience, the more you do it, the more comfortable you do get, you know, with the components and bringing maybe more than one component in. And the kids love it, because of that same Minecraft program, when we run it math through centers, there's three different centers, you know, the kids that didn't necessarily make it into that quote unquote project group are like, well, can I still do that? You know, is that something I could still do? And I'd say, yeah, yes, you can, you know, like, And it was revamped just a little bit, but they still had that to-do list. And this is what I had to create. This is what I have to calculate. At the end, we were always building graphs and just, you know, either hanging them outside, or my goal was always for them to build something and then to use WeVideo. We have WeVideo accounts. So to put everything video based and then to put videos out there explaining what they did. It was just really cool to see, you know, everyone get into a quote unquote math project. And, you know, it's the kids that are coming and saying, I don't like math. Math stinks. Math is hard. But can I do that math project?
You know, and real quick on the voice and choice thing, too, and Minecraft has been brought up. I used to have, like, you can do, especially with like 8th, 7th, and 8th graders, you can either do any of these three things, but you can propose to me if you want to do it a different way. And, you know, everybody but like one or two kids are going to do one of those two or three ways, and you're prepared for that. And then I've had kids come up and say, can I do that project with Minecraft? And I always answer, I don't know. Could you? If you can sell me on how you could do it with Minecraft, yeah. You know, but you need to tell me how you would do it, because we'll put the onus back on the student, you know, to bring you a proposal. But that's giving them voice. You know, it's their voice. This is your proposal. You wanted to do it this way, and you can dump it on them if they're not doing well. Hey, you wanted to do this. You know, I didn't tell you to do it, you know. And so it really helps with the whole, you know, agency with the student.
Yeah, it gets them into class and learning because it's something they want to do.
Yeah, I always like to throw that. I do that with a lot of projects, is propose something to me. Like, I'm open, you know, if, because you're sometimes going to have a better idea of a more interesting project than even I did. So why not? Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I love that, throwing that in there. And I think sometimes even just picking one unit or one lesson to focus on, you know, I'm going to change this to a PBL unit or a PBL lesson helps, you know, like then say I'm changing my entire, you know, the whole curriculum this year. Like, focus on a unit that you feel real comfortable with, you know, and run with PBL in that unit.
And this, you know, we're coming out, this episode will be out in October. Now, granted, I started doing all this work in June. So over the summer, you know, after working with PBLs over the course of the school year, now there's all kinds of time to start thinking, oh, you know what? We could do this for chapter one, and not necessarily setting things up, but just getting those ideas down, because it is really hard to do on your own. But to have the ideas and starting points and then get back, and I'm fortunate enough to work with a pretty good team of two other girls on the 5th grade team that we all focus on math, that now there would be three minds working together on different ideas that are already started. So I feel like our next 2 days that we have on our first 2 days of in-service, when there's all kinds of times sitting around and, you know, everyone's complaining, there's nothing to do. I'm going to say, hey, you know, you guys want to do this?
and you know, what's great like about it. PBL, once you become a project-based learning teacher, it's everywhere. And I tell this story in every day one of every training I ever have done. And that is, it really happened to me. I was sitting there having dinner. My first year I was doing project-based learning. And I'm looking at the salt shaker. And I thought, why are the holes this size? Is it because of the size of the, you know, each of the little salt particles? Is it for flow? You know, and all of a sudden I got, oh my God, I'm thinking of a project. I'm thinking of salt shaker. But you do that. You see it everywhere around you.
Well, I was really excited, and I jotted it down on a post note, and I even said to Ron, this is me being a Debbie Downer, no one's going to want to do it anyway, but to do a book study for the math teachers in our school, I'll bring a PBL in the math classroom. Like, how I think that would be amazing, because then all it would transform, I think, the whole school.
But we are zooming in. We'll zoom in with the group.
We do. Anytime.
So what kind of challenges have you guys seen with trying to implement PBLs in the classroom?
Oh, I got a funny one. I'll start it. I know Chris got some too. But okay, so me and my husband actually has a running joke now about, it's one of my problems. I have two of them. And it was because early on, no one wanted to do PBL in my building. no one wanted to, and my husband started when I was coming home and complaining. He was like, babe, nobody wants to play with you. It's okay that nobody wants to play with you. And so I was like, I was hurt, but it made me start laughing. So I got out of it. I was like, okay. So now I have this sort of like, nobody want to play with me, babe. And so so I started seeking outside of the building. And I started using social media. And it's one of the ways I ended up having a project with a teacher that was in Australia. I did my first sort of cross international project that way by being open to not having people in my building be the ones who play with me, but finding other like people outside. I have had some administrative like goofiness too. Some were like supportive, but like you still need to do this for the district stuff. And then there was some who was like, I don't know about this. And so the way I handled those situations was one, PBL, you can do any district stuff inside of it. And so I would incorporate whatever district thing we were doing, I would put it inside of the PBL. And then I would make sure that I would work on the administrator who's having a hard time. I would work on them. Because what? Let's be honest, like our administrators don't really come see us. So they don't really know what I'm doing in that room. and I get like forewarning. So I would, as I'm working on that person who's like not really feeling me, I made sure I was doing all of the things they liked when they were evaluating me or doing anything. But I would also talk with them about, you know, later in my like post-teacher conference, you know, hey, they were actually in the midst of this process. Like you didn't get to see all of the pieces, but like this is what PBL is. And so thankfully, those people were short-lived. For the most part, I've always had pretty supportive administrators. But that happens. And then also, like, there's definitely always you got to do district stuff. You got to have your learning scale, you know, up on the wall. You got to say the learning objective on the, you know, like, you know, whatever. Pick whatever's happening this year, depending on which superintendent just got replaced. And what they got coming down the pipe. And you can still do that too. You just incorporate it inside of it. But yeah, Chris probably got some good stories too.
Well, yeah, you know, I was picked by a superintendent to go to a middle school and bring project-based learning into the middle school. So I was going to be an instructional coach for project-based learning. And we decided on, we would start with the sixth grade and have every sixth grade teacher in every subject doing project-based learning. And I went off and got with the New Tech Network as trained as a coach to do that. And we had an incredibly successful year. And the deal was, okay, we'll do seventh grade the second year. And it was going so well, we said, let's do 7 and 8. We'll do the whole school. 6, 8, project-based learning. It's going to be great. And the principal, you know, scores are great. Everything's great. Principal gets grabbed by the superintendent, become an assistant superintendent. So now there's a new principal walking in the door. Okay. First thing he says to me, well, maybe other than hello, probably, he walks up and he's like, all right, you're going to have to sell me on this project-based learning stuff because I'm hearing that you're going to do this with the whole school and I'm not sold on it. And he really pushed back hard and we took a step back a little bit because he was not comfortable having his teachers doing project-based learning. And I was only in there one more year. So, you know, they kind of drifted away from it. They did. And so it takes one administrator can do that.
That's interesting that they would hire that guy that didn't seem to be on the same page.
Yeah. It was weird. It was weird. But the district was having, you know, as she said, we had a superintendent who was gone, you know, right after that, too, because he was doing things. And yeah, you know, but I've had success, too, where I had two of us. I taught geometry. Another woman taught Algebra 1, and we had this wild idea of teaching Algebra 1 and Geometry in 1 year and Algebra 2 and the second half of Geometry in the second year and getting Algebra 1, Geometry, and Algebra 2 in 2 years so that every student would be able to take calculus if they or statistics in their senior year. Okay? We created the whole year. We sold it to the math people in the district, and the math people said, all right, if you can promise me you're going to hit these wickets, and we were the only school in the district not on, you know, in October, you need to be doing this because we redid everything, but we sold it to them and it worked well enough that it could have done, but we realized that we were not doing it a good job for the students. So we did kind of an experiment for 1 year and kind of stopped doing that. But if you have district people who are strong, you can sell these things to the district people. You can, and have them be your advocates for what you want to get done.
What was the problem with service to the students?
We felt at the end of the year, we didn't feel bad about the algebra one that they had, and we didn't feel bad about the geometry, but we were trying to see, making sure that second half of geometry and the algebra two was going to be strong put together. That's where we were like, because then they have to go on to pre-calculus after that. Yeah. Are they going to be ready with pre-calculus trying to do both of those things? So we did a lot of
algebra analyzing. Two is a beast too.
Yeah.
Those exactly. are tough subjects, especially to try to
based. Yeah.
I was going to say a year long unit.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of runs us right into then, how are things going to look differently? Cause we're a K-8 district. So if we were going to try, you know, like how would it look? Our one building's K-2. And then I work in the 3-5 building. And then we have a middle school building 6-8. So how would things look differently? Like in a kindergarten class as opposed to a third grade class, or would there be much of a difference?
Really, the like implementation, the strategies look different more than the structure, which is beautiful. Like I tell people all the time, if you can get more routines alike, the better the kids can grow. Like, you know, when you think of like, especially at the secondary level, one of the only challenges I had about doing PBL and me being the only one is they had different structures all day.
Right.
And so when they finally got to me, you know, I had to like unlearn them. I was like, no, remember, I ain't talking to you all class, period. Like that ain't my structure. I'm a TikTok. Like we gonna be quick. And you getting to work. and then you fit to come tell me what you said. Like, no. So like having so many different structures, is usually the weakness of education all, but PBL has such a great structure to a unit. And then the lesson level of the day-to-day, the workshop model is often what we do. And that's also a great like structure that kids pick up on. Like, even though, again, my kids had to change all the time, they knew all the time. They were like, Ms. Norfar is going to talk just for a little bit. We just to get ready to work. We're going to go tell them what happened and we're going to rinse and repeat. So you could do that K-8. Or in any grade band, and you can do certain thinking routines. Like another book, if nobody's ever like looked into it, that's amazing, is Making Thinking Visible. Yes. By, I always mess up Ron's last name. Ron, please still be my friend on Twitter. But Ron.
Oh, Chris, Ron, might have it.
It's one of our favorites. Like he has like three of them and he just came out with another one. But it's in essence a structured process that kids go through to just make their thinking visible. And so it can be done K-8 again. You just adapt it. Like kindergartners, you're doing it much more with them. And slowly through the year, you're releasing them to do some things by themselves. Like I've been astonished at some videos that's been produced by EL Education. They have this teacher who I think she loops with her kids. Because I remember seeing one kid in the video and he was a kindergartner. Then the next video, he was a first grader. But her name is Ann Simpson. Maybe saying EL Education and Googling Ann Simpson, it'll pop up. But she had those kindergartners doing things that my high school kids were doing. Yeah. They were picking out what they were doing that day. They were running a center all by themselves. She wasn't over there. Like, I was like, what? So it's you just got to like think about the developmental appropriateness of the routine for the grade level and then just adjust, but start to talk cross grade level of what does it look like? Like, what is some of the practices we all want to try and do? You know, sometimes people just all agree to do interactive notebooks. Like I remember that was a thing. Sometimes people agree to do, you know, certain. So it's the same with PBL. What do we want to agree to do inside of the structure that helps kids grow and think about what you want them to become to make that decision. So don't do it based upon whether or not the teachers like it, because Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
you ain't gonna get nowhere. But if you have like, okay, we want them to really be good at communicating And so, okay, here's the set of structures. We're going to pick one and we're going to ride this. We're going to ride this horse until we maybe see if it's something else we like better. But go from there. And then it's really, really easy. Chris,
what I was going to add is, because you kind of alluded to this, is we spent a lot of time talking about vertical alignment in every of the contents, but in math, you know, what are they learning in third grade? What are they learning in fourth grade? How should they be going to get, we should be doing the same thing with these structures, you know, and not to keep saying New Tech Network, but they're one of the bigger schools doing project-based school systems. But they do that with all of the, you know, the soft skills. So communication, what does communication look like in third grade? What does communication look like in sixth grade? What does it look like in ninth grade? You know, they have that for each of those. And you can just Google those and find them and use them as a structural ideas for a entire school district. You know, we really could. Because, again, we spend a lot of time talking about vertical alignment with math. But why not with the skills you need to be good at project-based learning?
And those are skills to be good for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the fun part. Like, you can add whatever else you want, too. Like, you guys mentioned our book really showed empathy, which is so funny to me because that's a skill set I'm always working on. But you could add empathy as a piece that you want to develop throughout K through 8. Shoot, you can add problem solving. Or human decency. Like, you can just do so many pieces that you just go ahead and make, some planning time and have, you know, great sub sort of committees so that you can help grow a buy-in. Because, it's hard to get buy-in in a building. But if you at least have some opportunities for people to engage, that helps with the buy-in. It ain't complete foolproof, but it starts the process. And then you could grow from there. It's one of the things I love the most about project-based learning is how I was able, especially if I taught them for multiple years, because there was a few different times in my career where I had to move grade levels because the test moved. So I've always been the testing teacher, which PBL still helps kids pass tests too. People always wondering that. But I would, teach ninth grade because that's where the test was. Then the test moved to 10th grade, so I moved to 10th grade. Then the test moved to 11th grade, so I moved to 11th grade. And it was one particular span that I got to have them for multiple years. And although I was hurt, like there was this senior, it was in calculus. And I just let them. I was like, we're creating the ultimate classroom right on my board, like everything you want. And so I always did this routine, ask three before me. Like they had to ask three people before they could ask me. And so they put on their no more ask three before me. I thought people was okay with this. They were like, no. But then weirdly, school starts. I mean, so we start going to groove. I'm willing to answer questions now without it being a question or forcing them to go to somebody else. And they literally would just make circles. So after we would go over, because again, it's calculus. There's nothing sexy about that. But we're going over a derivative or something. And I'm writing it up on the board, like the basics of it. And I was like, okay, let's go. Let's like start working. They would literally just transform the room into a big like study hall. They would make a big circle together and they would start working on it together. And so I was like waiting. And one day while I was grading papers, because for a few days, nobody would ever ask me nothing. So I said, hey, I thought y'all said y'all wanted me to not ask three before me. I've been here for a few days now, and I'm just grading papers because y'all not asking me nothing. And one of my students was like, well, you told us not to need you. I said, well, excuse me. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Okay.
You'd stamp that and done.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just bringing up what you said. You're the one who said no more ask three before me. Just trying to get back at them. But yeah, there really is a beautiful, that was a funny story to explain how beautiful the growth is when you are intentional about what you want students to become. It was what kept me in the game. I always remembered what they turn into and how they become as growing adults. And it just made me love teaching more and more.
that kind of answers the next one. Like, why should it, why should a new teacher or he or her throw their hat into the PBL ring?
Okay, Chris can sell another angle to it. That's what we're doing.
With everything else that's on that new teacher's plate.
Right. Here's what happened to me, but I wasn't new. I was at 14 years of teaching regular, even though, as I said earlier, you know, that I understood collaborative groups. I didn't understand collaborative groups, cooperative groups. I'm sorry. I understood cooperative groups, but didn't understand collaborative groups. But I went to a new tech school and I was told we go project to project. And you finish a project on a Friday and on Monday you're starting a new project and you do that for the entire year. And I'd never taught. And the principal said, you're going to feel like a new teacher year. And in November, there were like five or six of us brand new teachers. There was tears. There was stress because we were forced that we have to do this. So my advice is always, as we said, you know, a while ago in this podcast, pick elements of project-based learning that you know you can handle, that you can get your head around, that you can feel comfortable enough. Because like you said, there's so much new teachers have to do. There's so much on their plate. You know, even attendance. I was the attendance, you know, I was always getting the call. You haven't done attendance yet. I could not do attendance. Yeah. That's just, I'm trying to teach. I'm not going to stop and do attendance. And, you know, they're either here or they aren't, you know. But there's so much on your plate as a new teacher. And so trust us that PBL is going to work. Trust us that you need to incorporate eventually all of the elements of project-based learning if you're going to do a whole project. But every day you can be using parts of project-based learning in your classroom and make your classroom and your teaching better so that your students are having a more enjoyable time in your class. Because when there is structure, they're better. And structure doesn't mean you have to be mean. Structure could just be, hey, it's 10 minutes to go. We're going to do a reflection and here's how we're doing the reflection today. You know, but and every day they know that. So that's going to help them be better as students and you be better as a teacher.
Man, that'd be awesome if that was through all school-based. So mm-hmm. like in kindergarten, they're doing things in first grade and second grade. And then, you know, in the what would we call that, upper elementary, it looks a little different, but still on those same guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Then you think like, what kind of projects, if you've had experience from kindergarten, the magnitude of projects that you can hit in upper middle school, you know, eighth grade or high school, like you could be working on projects that are literally game changers. Like, you know, you could be solving real world mm-hmm. problems, and not just the students who, you know, are gifted,
right,
you know, getting to do that, but you have everybody involved. Yeah, pretty, that would be awesome.
Make and especially community. Like in your community, if you have a community-based school, you know, by the time they're in seventh and eighth grade, they know what issues are in their community. They know what their parents talk about. They know that there's a problem with this, there's a problem with that. You know, now they have that structure of how to do a project. You throw that at them, you know, hey, you know, you heard about so-and-so with this problem, let's fix it.
And they know the people in the community that could help.
Yeah.
So exactly. Now it's, you know, real world. Hey, how do we connect this with this to solve yep. this?
Yep.
Do you guys have like a favorite project?
Okay. It's a couple that I would say I really love. I do love it's not a full project intentionally, it's to get them interested. I do love my Ultimate Classroom project. It's at the beginning of the year. It's to set the culture and the stage. One of the reasons why I love it is because I got the kids to decorate my room. but I know, FYI, there's a lot of teachers like, oh my God, they decorated your room. How did you, I didn't care. Like, I'm not like tied to curtains. Like, it's beautiful. Whatever you wanted this room to be, we just got to have all five classes agree. Like, we're not changing the setup every hour. But I love the way we co-created the class. I love about that project is that we co-create a culture together. We make agreements together and we make an understanding of how we're going to learn together. And then another one I like that I've done quite a few times, and it actually wasn't mine. I shout out to Charity, also now she's director. I'm a PB, district service leader at PBL Works. But she had this called a Parabola Project, and it was a business model project where we would help local businesses change their prices. And so I love the way a lot of my kids really kind of are entrepreneurial. They're always, got a side gig hustle. So I love the way it engaged them with thinking through pricing and structure of business and helping someone else that's not them. So those were my two favorite from the high school level.
Chris?
And it's funny. I'm gonna tell a project that didn't work so well, but if I could have done it multiple times, I think it really would have been good. And that is, we wanted to design puppets in my class, and so we're talking about drawing a picture of it, and so you're doing scaling and things like various math from that angle. Scaling is always something you can do in a math class. But anyway, puppets. So they had to draw the puppet. But I got my language teachers involved, and I got my theater teacher involved, and they put out a puppet show. And in our school, it was an international baccalaureate school where every student either took French or Spanish. So in the French class, they were writing scripts. In the Spanish class, they were writing scripts that the puppets then told in French or Spanish. And they had to write the scripts for the character. Then they had to design the character by drawing it. And they did that in their art class, and they practiced their skits in the theater class, and they designed the puppets and made the puppets in my class. And so we had all those teachers involved, and then we put out a puppet show. All the parents came in for the puppet show and everything. And that, that really, once you get other teachers and other disciplines playing with you, and they get excited. They do.
Yeah.
I remember my first year at the last school I was at, Meridian World School, IB school. And first day, we're talking about before school starts, and I'm meeting the teachers, and the eighth grade science teacher says, and I was doing design then, not math, but I was incorporating, whenever I did a project, I brought math in. So I would get with the math teacher, like, all right, what are you struggling with? But anyway, so the science teacher's like, hey, I want to do something. I want to do a project with you this year. I was like, great. Can we do one earlier? I'm like, sure, let's do a project. I'm just trying to be friendly. Yeah, let's do a project. And she goes, well, I was thinking about doing a Rube Goldberg machine. I'm like, great. Yeah, we can do a Rube Goldberg machine. And we talk about, all the science with, gravity and various other things in there. And that'd be great. And she says, yeah, but I want to start it next week, like on a first day class. And I smiled like, sure. she had, she was one of these very organized. She's a wonderful person, wonderful teacher. But she was very organized in that, here is September, boom, here's what I do in the first week in September with everything she needed. I mean, structure these worksheets, this. So it's like, well, I need to do it in my class. I need to tell them that I want them to create this Rube Goldberg machine, and I want them to explain the gravity to me, what's going on. And they're going to come to you, and you're going to not teach them that until they ask you for help. But I teach that on like the third day. Like, no, if they come to you on the third day saying, Mr. Fancher really wants us to be able to explain this, then yes, you teach it. But you're not going to teach it to them until they come to you saying, we really need to learn about gravity. Then you're going to teach it to them. And I worked with her, but we put on a full eighth grade parent night with all the Rube Goldberg machines. There was so much excitement. And we kicked off the school year with that. And it was great, getting the parents and the community involved with whatever project you work on is so important.
I like the fact that you could talk about a failed project or maybe not a failed project, but didn't necessarily go the way you wanted it to, which I'm assuming is going to be a lot of the case when you're jumping into this for the first few times.
Well, and you gotta be brave enough to say, this isn't going anywhere. We need to kill this project. You got to be able to do that. I have a school year that I got to teach, and we're getting behind, and the content isn't being taught, and we're spending too much time on the computer trying to do this when we should be learning math. Those things will happen. They will. And you got to be willing to say, all right,
it's just a bad one. Like I did a really bad one. It was called, I'll never forget, it's called Expressions Everywhere. And there were expressions everywhere. But
expressions is a tough topic, though. That
but it was tough. Not at ninth grade.
Like it was, oh, okay.
It was not their first rodeo. But I had a kid who was really great about being honest. He had no filters, and I needed a no filter. And so I went over to him. I was like, this is horrible. And then he was like, yes, it is. It's pretty painful. I said, okay. And so I just was like, y'all just don't worry about that PowerPoint. We're going to scratch this. We'll start over again tomorrow. I made something out of nothing. I apologize. And that's a really great thing to do more of. Kids need to like see what it's like from an adult, admit when you're wrong, right, when you mess up, you know, like it's okay. Like the world don't end. And it's a great way to show how they could do that same skill set. You're going to get some stuff wrong.
Yeah.
Chalk it up. My first year in math that last year, those kids saw a lot of that, especially my afternoon class. And there were times I'm like, wait a minute, this freaking worked earlier. Why is it? what did I do? And I forget the topic, but there was one time I was like, you know what, guys, let's go outside because I need to walk away right now because it's not working. I'm standing in front and the kids, they're just looking at me like, what the hell is this guy even talking about? And you know what? We left and I got really frustrated and upset. I'm like, it's my first year teaching math. Strong, like just our fifth grade math curriculum after 14 years of third grade math, it was a lot more intense. So even after 15 years of teaching, I'm still there at night or in the morning trying to go through that lesson and understand the why. And that day I'm like, you know what? We're going out. Mr. Apollo needs to breathe a little bit and we'll come back tomorrow. And you know, we came back in, we did social studies. It was fine. Sent him back to homeroom, came in the next day and we conquered that lesson. But it was, they saw that, I'm not going to say quite a bit, but they definitely saw Mr. Apollo up there going, wait a minute, like, what am I doing wrong? And I feel like you said, that's great for them to say, hey, like this guy's the math teacher and he's struggling, you know? So it's okay to find it difficult or not be your favorite subject, but we're still going to go through it. And I always equate it to like jigsaw puzzles. I don't like jigsaw puzzles. Doesn't mean I can't do a jigsaw puzzle. And it's very similar to math. Might not like math, but it doesn't mean you can't do it.
Well said.
Ron, did you want to jump in?
I was just going to say, like, I have, you know, kind of what you were saying, like, I teach per marking period because I only get the kids for 45 days. And I always say I have first marking period guilt because by the time it gets to third marking period, I've refined that project now where I'm like, oh man, those poor kids in the first marking period, like it's nowhere near as good as it is this marking period, but yeah, I mean, I think that's just the nature of the beast and it just shows you're being reflective and, you know, upgrading what needs to be upgraded.
Okay. How about the use of AI? Have any of you dabbled with that, with trying to create a unit or give a little help with taking some weight off your shoulders and coming up with something?
I played with it just this morning again. I've done it quite a few times in the last 6 months. But I did it this morning. I just went third grade, Common Core standards, and I picked out, you know, three or four standards. I said, create a 4-week project with this, and I want to focus on this as their other skills they're working on. And bloop, it, you know, 20 seconds or so, it printed out a 4-week project for me. Now, is it something I can then take and, you know, the school students come in the next morning and they're like, okay, here we go. No, but if you need something, I look at it like, you know, having a rough draft in front of you, yep, you know, for a yep project. It's there. It gives you elements that you may not have thought of. It gives you a flow. And that's important to have a flow for a 3-4 week, you know, project. And you can work with that and then make it your own. You know, you may change totally what you do, but now you have a structure in front of you. You have an idea in front of you.
Yeah. But you can also use it for personal stuff. Like I'm starting to use it to tell people no in a nice way. So, yeah.
The last thing, though, other than, you know, your series of books, and you already kind of talked a little bit about your organization, like what other resources do you think are out there that teachers could find helpful and useful?
I would say definitely there is a few channels that's really great on YouTube to watch. PBO Works is one. I mentioned that's the organization I work for. EL Education is another. They are doing a lot of video production and pushing things out there. So those are two sort of like, I think it can really just help you in a quick moment and visually see.
Edutopia, right? Edutopia has a project-based learning section, you know.
Do they?
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Edutopia has a section for almost every piece of great teaching. But yeah, I've completely forgot about Edutopia. They're really, their video library is really great too. And it's broken down to where you could just look at project-based learning stuff or just some other good teaching practices stuff. They really got both of those on lock.
And Pinterest again, is it more end of unit projects, but it might be something that triggers something in your own thinking that'll help you come up with a project idea. But Pinterest, there's a lot of stuff out there.
I never thought about Pinterest.
PBL Works quite a bit. Like, and I think it's almost like you were saying with Chris, with AI, where it gives you a structure and a flow, and then you can kind of, you know, pull in your more of your ideas. Yeah. It's definitely helpful for me.
Well, that's pretty much, I mean, that's all our talking points. Ron, is anything else you want to kind of?
No, where can people, you know, find you guys, follow you on social media or, you know, where are your books, obviously on Amazon, you know, and it's three books.
Yes.
Yeah. For each grade level. So they all start project-based learning in the math classroom, but then it's grades K through two. Grades 3 through 5, grades 6 through 10. I'm still on Twitter. Well, formerly known as Twitter.
It will always be Twitter.
And I know. I was like, I don't know what he was. Okay, he's different. But I'm TH Norfar pretty much in every social platform. I'm on most things and I'm trying to do better about posting, but I wouldn't say that I'm like great at it. X is the best place because I do chat. So PBL chat, there's actually a PBL chat on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So like that's where you will find me and a lot of other PBL people. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as my name. I'm on TikTok weirdly I changed my handle to be Math PBL.
Okay.
I don't know why. Like it was so, I was like, why am I messing stuff up like this? Everybody knows TH Norfar. Now I got to say Math PBL on TikTok. But yeah. Hit me up and follow me. I'll follow you back.
Yeah. Same here. I'm C Fanch on Twitter. I'm also on Threads as C Fanch. I was going to add EduSpark, which is something we haven't been pushing. But EduSpark is a learning community that has both a free and paid version. If you get the pro version, you have access to all their stuff. But we did a kind of a course that goes along with the books. And there's a free version of it. And then we have the pro. If you are pro, you can have our pro version. And, you know, it's just out there. If you want, again, if you don't want to read the book and you want to have us kind of talk you through it, it is there. EduSpark. It's not dot world, EduSpark dot.
No, it is EduSpark dot world.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And they just have great, a lot of the international schools that are in Asia have like their entire school on EduSpark taking courses and things, and they just pay for a pro thing. And so, you know, a lot of the people that are looking at our books over there are looking at the courses over there. Are getting our books over there.
Yeah. And we have a free course on there to walk you through the process. So yeah, definitely check that out. And then that just made me remember, I don't know if people realize this, but Stanford University has a great like online training and they have one coming up. I mean, sometimes they're a little pricey, like you gotta be careful. they'll throw like a comment there, and I'm like, hold up. Who you reaching? But the Right Question Institute is about to do one. They're doing an entry level that starts, I want to say, in September. And then advanced one that's later. But if you go to Right,
advanced one.
I think it's rightinstitute.org or is it Right Question, Christian?
Right Question Institute.
That's a really, really, I've done their PD. That is a really good PD. Yeah. And it's a great, I think, starting point for like bringing back to that new teacher. And, you know, how do you help them get started? I think they give you a great structure for how do you have kids involved and questioning. It's real simple. It's easy to like design and think through, and you can carry it all the way through your unit, regardless of what the unit is. Your hardest part is finding out what would be your question focus, is what they call it. And it's an image. It can't be, you know, it can't be a question.
No, it needs to be an image. A statement.
Yeah, or a statement. Can't be a bunch of words, but it's supposed to spark inquiry. So, like, I'm going to do their advanced training just because I love just their stuff and refreshing. So I highly recommend that for people who are, like, trying to get out of traditional teaching.
And we put it in our book. We push that. We really do. We talk. I think it's in our chapter 3, maybe 4. Anyway.
Oh, it's later.
In there. Yeah. One of those chapters. But we talk about the question formulation technique, QFT, from the Right Question Institute. And it is great.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to definitely check that out. Thank you guys so much for your time, your knowledge. You were fun. You were my cheeks hurt a little bit, so I know it was good. I was smiling and laughing a lot, so that's good.
That's the important thing.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about having a good time, right? And then we can walk away with something and implement it the next day.
I can't wait to push this podcast for everybody to listen to. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I know.
Because they'll laugh and they'll be smarter.
Yes, and we were just talking about how we need to do more like things with people. We just every once in a while remember to tweet and let people know, like, you know, we're out there, we're available to help. It's so bad. I was like, Chris, oh my God, did you tell anybody stuff this week? And I was like, no, I didn't either. We really, this is beautiful, and it'll give us an opportunity to let people, because I had a couple people was like, I am just dying waiting for you to like write something else, say something else. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry.
We'll have something in October now.
That's right.
Yes. So yeah, thank this was again. So much fun.
Yeah,
so much
this fun. Was a win. This podcast was fun.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out, guys. Teacher nerds knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds. I'm talking teacher nerds. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Teacher Nerds, on Instagram at Teacher Nerds Podcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.